time of holiday season, and I know your time is precious, and I certainly appreciate you coming forward. I think you'll be will enjoy the program brought to us today by Gail Haskett, and we're very happy to have with us Representative Harris from the 17th District. Thank you for being participating in our discussions today. I'd like to call our meeting to order, and the first thing on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. So if I could have a motion and a second to approve the agenda, I would appreciate it.
I move to approve.
I second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Then it carries. The second thing on the agenda is the approval of the minutes dated November 19th, 2013. I would need a motion and a second to approve those, please.
So moved. Mm-hmm.
Second.
Okay. The motion has been made. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Any abstentions? That carries. Thank you. The next thing on the agenda is the chair's report. And I'd like to take this opportunity to inform the general public as well as our commissioners about how the working sessions that we started in probably about 3 or 4 months ago for 3:30 is the start of the work sessions is also open to the public, and you're very welcome to attend. We're finding that those are extremely beneficial in helping us design and work through the projects and our strategies that we have set forth out of the Aging Readiness Task Plan for the commission. So I would urge you to come and listen to our discussions there. As chair, and I met with Karen Wall, vice chair, with Commissioner Stewart on December 10th, and we had a very productive meeting with him, and certainly are appreciative of his efforts in helping us in providing support for our Commission on Aging and some of the programs that we've been done. We possibly might have a joint meeting with the county commissioners at the first quarter of 2014, and we will have a discussion with agenda ideas and discussion about ideas and ways in which the county commissioners can benefit and work with the Clark County Commission on Aging to help us advance our strategies and some of our projects. We also did discuss the evolution of the Clark County Commission on Aging and what that will look at for as the years to come, and we'll be discussing that in our work sessions throughout 2014. We informed Commissioner Stewart that we had recently elected a treasurer, which is Kirsten Ware, Commission on Aging, and that we have established policy and procedures for a non-county association account to elicit funds for our projects. The account is set up at Umpqua Bank, and we had an initial donation of $1,000 to open up that account. Right now, the committee chairs are all working with the communications and treasurer to communications committee and treasurer to come up with budgets for different projects for this next fiscal year. We also wanted to acknowledge individuals and groups by appreciating their efforts for implementing a strategy of our aging readiness plan. And so this will be something that we'll be doing routinely for programs such as the chaired housing group that came and presented to us. So we're starting that in Clark County in March 2014. We also, and thanks to Commissioner Stewart, who gave our opening remarks at the telehealth conference that we held in October, he talked a little bit about how impressed he was with, of course, Randy setting that up and chairing that, which we're so appreciative of. But he also was taken aback about the number of participants we had, which was about 75, but they came from all different aspects within the community, not only from the healthcare community, but from the non-healthcare, from Clark County citizens, from older adults, younger adults, and was very appreciative of our efforts for that. We also pointed out that we did make the front page of the Messenger, which was a biggie for us, so we liked that, as well as the television televised on CVTV. We also informed the commissioner that the National Telehealth Conference will be held in Portland in the spring of 2014, and it will be possible that maybe one of the commissioner members of the our Commission on Aging will be attending that. We talked a little bit about the Commission Communication Committee. which we have a speakers bureau that is available for individuals to go out and speak to partners within the community and groups. Our future events are the 50 Plus Expo event coming up, the Clark County Home and Garden Show, the Recycled Arts Fair, which will be featuring some handmade crafts for older adults, so that we'll move from the parking lot to inside Esther Short Park with a little shade and a little better, hopefully viewing that people will recognize us better. We also talked about our board retreat, which will be coming up sometime in June or July. We also wanted to talk a little bit about shared housing. The Let's Share Housing Group will launch their program here in Clark County in March of 2014. The tentative date has not been set yet, but it will be held at the library downtown location, and we'll be doing that. Bob, who is chair of our housing, has developed a plan and contacted several businesses, associations, and individuals to partner with regarding to universal green and handicapped accessibility design. And I think that's a very huge project, and we certainly appreciate Bob's effort with that. And then the committee chair and vice chair and county staff will be meeting with Bob and the committees on housing in January to look at those options and to discuss them. The transportation and mobility program, there's a volunteer sidewalk program out there, and they've had a discussions with the county officials with regard to that as well. Our next Clark County Commission on Aging work session will be January 21st, 2014 at 3:30 in this room. We will have a representative from the Clark County Attorney's Office coming to talk to us about our roles and responsibilities as commissioners and what we need to do. Our next meeting will be at 4:30 p.m. on January 21st, and I'm not sure whether the speaker has been established for that meeting or not. It has been, and it is. Well, stay tuned. Evidently, it didn't make a very good impression on us, so stay tuned here for what's happening in January. What?
Mental health organization.
Well, of course, we all need mental health organization in January to come and discuss our issues with us. So that's the chair report, and I certainly appreciate each one of the commissioners and their involvement within our group. So thank you again. Let's talk a little bit about our project updates, and I want to talk a little bit about turning it over to some of the really excellent projects that I'm excited about. And Kathy, I'm excited about time banking, so would you please tell us about time banking?
Well, we continue to move forward with organizing this project. This month got our budget turned in for this fiscal year, the remainder of this fiscal year and the beginning and next fiscal year. Big part of that is hoping that we will have a VISTA who will be able to work with that program. Application for the VISTA we need to get turned in no later than March, so that's a big push for us right now. So we're starting to organize that paperwork and submission.
Okay, and for the public, the VISTA is a VISTA volunteer that we will be able to hook up with and bring on to assist us in evaluation of that program, and then helping us if we decide that the program needs to move forward, setting it up and moving forward with that. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. We're looking at right now probably around $6,500 in order for the VISTA volunteer that we'll be soliciting funds for. But for that money, we get an individual that works 40 hours per week on our project, but we have to have certain criteria and meet certain goals within that project, and so we'll be developing those in the near future. But it's very exciting about time banking, and for those of you that might not be familiar with it, is time banking is a program that will allow individuals to volunteer for someone and bank their hours to be utilized by themselves in other capacity or to give them to someone else to utilize. So for example, if I do a task for my neighbor, such as mowing a lawn, I can bank that, but give it to a friend of mine who needs respite care for a mother or an elderly parent in that realm. The other thing that's coming up is we're doing some presentations starting in January with the neighborhood associations, and would you address that?
Yeah, the neighborhood associations and the faith-based community. And part of that is gathering input for the interest in this kind of a program within the community. So we've got, I think, four or five places identified that will actually be doing that in the first quarter of 2014.
Right, and I believe the first one is Vancouver Heights Neighborhood Association will be the first one that will be coming out and conducting with that. So thank you again for your committee and their hard work that's been done on that project. Randy, would you talk a little bit about telehealth, about the October 2nd conference that we came out on the plus side with funds on that, and that'll be what maybe that'll be utilized for?
As a result of our October 2 telehealth conference here in Vancouver, our goal is to maximize the momentum that was created, the enthusiasm that was created, the connections that were created at that conference. So with that in mind, I think that our next step will be to bring an expert in to address the commission. And when I say an expert, I mean, for example, a fellow that I spoke with a couple of days ago, the director of the Northwest Telehealth Resource Center, Northwest Regional Telehealth Resource Center, a fellow named Bob Wolverton, headquartered in Billings. They've been around quite a while, and their focus is to help communities create an environment that would accelerate the development of telehealth and the disbursement of that for the good of the community. So I am hoping he is willing to come and talk with us and help us in any way he can. So I'll be working on that, and I think nailing down a time for him to come over and do that. I think that's a good first step, particularly if we keep in mind what I think should be the next step, and that is to start talking with local Clark County healthcare executives, hospital clinics, et cetera, profit and nonprofit, and see where they're at in this world of telehealth, where they're at, where they plan to be, and how we may be able to work together to, again, accelerate the benefits that telehealth can bring to Clark County and, for example, particularly the rural areas where people don't have ready access to good health care and medical care.
Great. Thank you. And Bob, would you share a little bit about the housing and your committee, please?
Okay. We've got about four projects underway. One, we're talking about the county parade of homes, the possibility of them building an accessible home as part of their parade of homes. We can't do it in 2014, but in 2015 and beyond, we have the opportunity. And so we're going to start meeting with them in January to begin thinking about doing that at that point. We also have an interesting little thing where we're asking Lowe's Incorporated, the building supply company, to build a accessible house on their property so it can be a demonstration for the community to come and see what an accessible house is like. And the site manager thinks it's wonderful because all the products that they would sell will be in that house at that point. And they're right next to 1,000 houses that probably need to be remodeled.
Good job.
Another project that we've got is we've asked the American Building Community and the Southwest Washington Land Trust to build a house, an accessible house for a military veteran, and have it available next year on Veterans Day and make it available to a veteran that they would select.
Nice.
And I think that's And I can add to that, I think Chuck and Jim Wilson have already begun talking with those folks. So I think that's a go, but we'll have to wait and see how that goes. One other thing I'd like to say, which is not a project, well, it's a project. The Housing Committee has decided that it wants to create an educational awareness campaign of what it's going to be like to people to be 80 years old, and then what they need to do to prepare for that. And we've decided we want to do it, but I want to ask you folks whether you think it's a good idea, and also because there are things besides housing that are important, we would invite the chairs of each of the other committees and the communication committee to also participate. We probably won't have it put together till next July or so, and money may become an issue, but we still have a couple of years really to do a big campaign to inform the baby boomers what 80 years old means and what they need to do to prepare for it. So if you like the idea, we'll go ahead with it.
Thank you very much, Bob, for the doing. We'll talk a little bit more about that in our work session, about how to move forward on that project in January. But thank you very much for that. Chuck, do you have anything on transportation you would like to share?
No, what I did last time, I think. We're working with our, with moving forward with the county pedestrian and bike group and moving the project over into their arena so that actually really fits a lot better with that and everything. So.
Well, great. Thank you very much. And again, thank you and Jim Wilson for talking to the veterans groups about setting that Universal Green Design House up for that. That's a great, great campaign.
Cool.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, you too. Communications.
We're working on a couple of the projects that you guys have talked about recently. But one of the things that we've identified in our last communications meeting is we want to work, and I'm going to be making contact for the Recycled Arts Fair and being inside, is working with the Arts Commission to put us in touch and work together with seniors in our area. So we have something to put in that booth. So that's one project. One of the other things that we've identified is that we want to do an event. You know, we had our events that we had, you know, where we talked about each one with that. But we want to have an event for the community to come and not just learn about what we do, but highlight other things and highlight new projects and that. So that's something that we're kicking around. I did register for us to be at the Senior Expo, so that's a very good thing. We want to be a bronze sponsor, so we're going to be looking for whether it comes out of our budget. We'll have to talk to our treasurer of the budget of the county funds. We're going to get sponsors for it. It's $650.
Looks like you have $700.
No, you get it for free.
Okay.
Yeah. But I marked it anyway. And then we also talked about the possibility of one of the ways in helping time banking is, I'm very enthusiastic about that program. But when I started thinking about it was if you go to register and there's nothing in the bank to withdraw from to use, how it motivates people. So I've talked to Kathy and we're going to be working with her group in the near future to see how maybe a time banking raiser for in-kind, you know, babysitting, dog walking, whatever it is, so that when their program kicks off that they have something to draw from to keep the momentum going. So we're working on stuff.
Great. Thank you very much. Anything from benchmarks?
Yeah.
Treasure?
Oh, not necessarily from benchmarks, as we're just tracking throughout the year, and we'll be revisiting that towards the end of our year. For the treasure report, we now have a total of 18,800 $89.33. We picked up $200 in the last 20 minutes. That was great. But I do want to ask the commission for some guidance on, you know, I have yet to establish our procedures because we are just now forming our budgets. How are we to, how am I to respond to a request to pay for something such as the Connections Expo? I need your approval to write a check, or is it coming from the county?
Colette has the answer right there.
It's coming out of the county budget.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So that's great. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. We had a wonderful turnout at the Expo 55 over 65 last year, and I would encourage everyone to go to it and do that. Okay. Community, Healthy Communities, Karen, do you have anything you want to share?
No, nothing.
Okay. Thank you for sharing the community, the committees with us and the public. I certainly appreciate that and all the hard work everybody's done. I'd like to say thank you to Sherry, who's going to be speaking about time banking at our groups as well. So thank you. At this point in time, I think I'd like to turn the program over to Gail Haskett and Representative Harris regarding the state level of commission that they work with, and have that be part of it. If you don't know Gail or Representative Harris after the meeting, please introduce yourself and make yourself known. So, Gail, it's to you.
Well, thank you. It's been a while since I've seen anyone, and it sounds like that you've been doing a lot of good work, so congratulations on that. You may know that Governor Inslee, prior to his election, had promised AARP that he would do, within the first 6 months of his term, he would do an aging summit on a state level so that there would be a focus on how he might prepare and how the legislators might prepare for the age wave. And so he did do that October 1st, and I was invited to attend as I'm now chair of the State Council. As of September, I was invited to chair it, and so under that role, I attended, and Bill Barron was there as well. Actually, mm-hmm. We got to sit next to each other, and that was kind of fun. We got to talk about Clark County in the midst of all that. So, but anyway, we had 100 people, and what was disappointing to me, I mean, when we're looking at a summit, is in the end, it ended up being a one-day summit, which is very difficult, as you know, with all the work you're doing to cover major issues, multidimensional issues in one day, which technically was, I think, about 6 hours, wasn't it? We broke into groups in particularly four areas, but I'll go over to that in a minute. Representative Harris is on the Joint Legislative Executive Committee on Aging and Disability, so I feel really honored that he represents us, or we have somebody from our local area that's on that, because that group is the one that is charged, along with the State Council and some other groups, with implementing or finding ways in which we can implement the things that came out of the summit. So basically, I wanted to first talk about Dr. Laura Karst, and I think I gave the council members, there's some notes in the back that I just threw together. Dr. Laura Karstensen was from the Center of Longevity at Stanford University. And even as a gerontologist, I know an awful lot of data about aging, but there were some things I didn't know. And they were mind-boggling. To this very moment, they're mind-boggling to me. So the average life expectancy, of course, in the year 1850 was around 35 years of age, which by itself is pretty phenomenal. And in the year 1900, it was 47 years of age. And of course, in 2000, it hit 70 years of age, and now we're almost approaching 80 years of age as at our current year. Well, the thing that was the most mind-boggling to me was that two-thirds of the entire historical human population, the entire historical recorded human population, is alive today. So that means that two-thirds of every human that have ever lived are alive right now. That's a pretty mind-boggling statistic, because as you can see, if you step back from the statistic and look at the global implications of that, it affects every area. And many of those people, as you know, are going to be, for the first time ever, aged or over the age of 65. And that's where a lot of these challenges come from, not on just the national and state level, but also on a worldwide basis. I don't know if you know that in China, one out of every three people are over the age of 65 because of how they limited their birth rate. So they have quite a large challenge as well. And finally, it's not that we're genetically better off than our predecessors. Mm-hmm. It's that we have implemented through our growth and our research, medical advances, sanitation has changed. If anybody's visited Europe or some of the old towns in Pennsylvania, you know that when there was no sewer system, people just took it through the street. So of course, sanitation was a big issue, immunizations and other factors. So those three things that I've mentioned have really affected who we are today. But it's not just affected the aging generation, it's affected all generations. And so one of the things that I think we can all recognize, especially with the work that the commission has done as well, is that these issues are everybody's issues. They're not just the aging population's issue. And what we're doing, or what happens at the state level and at just about every level, is you've got the different generations competing for basically a pot of money for services that everybody is pretty much needing. You probably heard also one in every three college graduate at this point goes home to live with mom and dad. So those are some pretty dismal statistics when you think about that. They can't get jobs, is what it comes down to. So I'm going to very quickly just address the four areas of the summit that I'm not going to read all of them, but there were four main areas that we looked into at the summit level. And these are very broad areas, and although they are, I'm going to throw a lot of my personal feelings in on this, they're also somewhat vague. And as you know, in trying to grapple with some of the larger issues, it's really hard to get down to what are we actually going to do about it. It's pretty easy to identify the issue, but it's really difficult to say, okay, how are we all going to come together to kind of work on these issues? Because people are pretty polarized. Based upon their demographics, whether they're urban or rural issues, whether they're old or young, and a number of whether they're Democrat or Republican, on and on and on. We've got lots of polarization going on. I've talked about that before. So those four areas, the first one is livable communities, and as you know, approximately 15% of Washingtonians aged 65 plus no longer drive, and many have trouble finding affordable housing. And in the future, new housing and transportation options will hopefully keep our older population mobile and engaged. So there were four questions here that were asked or three questions in this category. And I wanted to go over that AARP defines the livable community as one that has affordable and appropriate housing, supportive community features and services, adequate mobility options, which together facilitate personal independence and the engagement of residents in civic and social life. So that's a very broad statement. And it's very difficult to think about that, even on the county level, as to what that means and how all those aspects come together. The top five ideas that came out of the group was that there would be small planning grants to support the development of livable communities based on principles of universal design and complete streets. Coordination of funding to eliminate the silos in housing and transportation. Clustering of services and housing around the transportation hubs. Past transportation revenue package. And the revenue package is something that I think, it's one of the things the State Council is very focused on. We have decided, which I'll go into later, to kind of change our strategy based upon what our mandated RCW responsibilities are. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But transportation is something we've picked. I think 80% of the transportation package is on infrastructure and 20% I think is on services. Is that about correct? The second area of, and create more affordable land for housing options. So again, very big ideas. The second is financial security. This, of course, I think we even talked about when I was on the Aging Readiness Task Force, but the data is more comprehensive now, and that's 25% of the people that are baby boomers have saved $25,000 or less, and that's their total assets. Another 25% have saved less than $50,000. And these are the people that are coming up, and that is where a lot of the big concern is how we're going to take care of these people on the already burgeoning Medicaid population that's out there and how the money is going to be found to support them. The safety net, of course, that we've had in this state is pretty strained right now. The other part about that is people who have saved, there's a couple areas. One is that in order to really qualify for Medicaid, you have to spend down whatever you've saved. And so that's a big issue. And of course, the other huge issue is financial exploitation, which is occurring more and more. Part of that is because the younger generation has their challenges as well, and they're actually taking, you know, from mom and dad. So it's a complicated question along those lines. But the top five ideas that came out of that was encourage private savings by making it easier for small businesses to offer a workplace savings account. AARP is actually taking that on as a challenge, and they're together a program called START, which is Start Saving Towards Retirement Today, something like that. And they're trying to implement some sort of program that is just the beginning stages, but you can go online and you can find the resources for that. Or if you write me, I can send you resources for what that START program looks like. Second is to protect pensions and support people of all ages and ability who want to enter the workforce or work longer. And there are some challenges around that too, because a lot of our older generation is not techno savvy, and a lot of positions now require that. Most businesses are dependent upon the internet and your internet skills and your ability to work with programs. Not to mention that corporations and a number of other businesses are finding that it's less expensive to hire those kids that are looking for jobs than it is to maintain the people that have been in that position for a long period of time and in a challenging economic situation. Let's see, teach financial literacy at all stages. One of the things that I know at the council that we've looked at, and I think at the state level, is that even the younger generation is woefully undereducated on what it is to be financially responsible. So that kind of crosses all generations as far as financial responsibility. And so how do we implement that, not just for the current generation and the current situation we're faced with, but long term? How do we get involved in the schools and the universities? And also, the people who are my age or who are in the baby boomer generation, who have this situation that we've already addressed with no savings. And in my line of work, I often find people who say, well, you know, Medicaid will take care of me, the state will take care of me if I don't have resources. And I think that situation is changing quite a bit. And ensure access to the guardians and improve oversight and accountability. Ensure a timely and more effective APS response. The state, Bill Moss, who's a DSHS, has said he's proposed 49 additional APS workers around the state with, I think it is $80 million, I can't remember how many million dollars it is to do that. One of the things that I'm advocating for also is additional education of APS workers. I talked to Bill Moss about what an average APS worker makes and what their average education level is at my last state council meeting. And we heard that the average APS worker makes $50,000, but their average training is 1 week. So, but they come either as a social worker or other qualifications, but this is such a specialized area that I personally am advocating for additional education as well as additional numbers. The other thing with APS workers is they don't necessarily have the tools or resources, especially in financial exploitation, to get the documentation that they need, because the banks are not required to present documentation except for law enforcement officers. And so that's another issue that we're facing with that. Ensuring the access to guardians and improve oversight and accountability. Another area that I'm pushing for is that there is some requirements around being a durable power of attorney, because that particular area, people are given power of attorneys and not explained what the limitations or responsibilities are with that. And I think that is just as big of an issue as guardianships. So these are things that I'm bringing forward on kind of on the state level. The third area was aging, healthy aging and health care. And that, of course, is as our population ages, the incidence of debilitating diseases and chronic health care conditions will increase, including Alzheimer's disease. We are one of the few states that don't have an Alzheimer's program. I'm trying to get our state to call it a dementia program, because not all dementias are the same and they're not treated the same. And that hasn't been looked at in some of the other state plans. So if we do move forward with the state plan on Alzheimer's, I'm hoping that it'll be a broader base, and I'm probably going to be serving on that committee with AARP to talk about the different types of what we might call that and how we might structure that program. So staying healthy as long as possible and then making informed end-of-life decisions are increasingly important. Most of us are not prepared. Even when I go out and give talks to people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and I ask how many people have advanced directives or wills, maybe 15 to 20%, which is always pretty amazing to me by a show of hands, because they haven't really thought of it, which is pretty amazing. I even have my children's things in place already because I've nagged them to death about getting all those things in order, because you never know what's going to happen. So the question along that was, what strategies can we implement to prepare for the projected increase in cases of Alzheimer's and other dementias, which is certainly on the rise and is expected to rise very quickly. And the top five ideas were to establish a task force, a commission on aging and disability committee to promote a culturally competent activist approach with a learning community aspect to aging and reform regulations around treatment providers and reimbursement. And you all have done that already, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Representative Harris is on that. Actually, that commission or that committee has been charged with quite a bit that it's just as overwhelming as the issues that we're looking at. To begin the process, develop the Washington State Alzheimer's Plan, which I've already kind of discussed, to grow and sustain a falls prevention program. And David Kelly's in the audience. And that program, the funding was cut on that. Is that correct?
Cut the expectations of return.
Okay. And so, of course, that's a big issue in regards to being healthy, because falls lead to so many other issues. Create a matching service online to match volunteers to needs using available resources. And Governor Inslee was really big on that. In fact, he called it Match.com. That name is already taken. But his idea is exactly what you all were talking about earlier. And some of the time banking ideas and so forth that you have are good. But Randy, I think your point is also well spoken, in that there's a lot of people that don't want to volunteer, that don't want to as they age. And what we're talking about here is people who are already retired helping other people that are already retired. And I'm not sure how successful that's going to be. I guess the jury will be out on that for a while. And finally, to develop a statewide system with measurable goals around posts, hospice utilization, ICU deaths, and desired place of death. As the past executive director of the hospice organization, Washington State Hospice Organization, I can tell you that I know that hospice utilization usually occurs the last week of life. And really what we're trying to get is the broader scope so that people are more prepared to die instead of holding on to the very last second and not processing what they need. So those were kind of the things under healthy aging. The final one was long-term care services and support, and that had the most ideas. And under that area, there is, for me, something that is very important is the Family Caregiver Support Program, and I'm a very big advocate of that. And I'm going to shoot out some statistics, and David, feel free to correct me on those. There are 850,000 in the state of Washington, thereabouts, family caregivers. 8,500 of them are enrolled in the Family Caregiver Support Program. The Family Caregiver Support Program comes out of the AAAs. And it helps with respite, it helps with counseling on how to handle, like if you're having to be with somebody who has dementia 24 hours a day, think about how that is and how stressful that is and how that can easily lead to abuse because of the stress that the other person is handling. And the Family Caregiver Support Program, to me, is a program that really needs funding, because one of our issues is that's going to keep people out of the Medicaid program if we can keep them in the homes. And that means educating the families on how to handle that situation, how to handle those situations and the stresses. Did I cover it, David?
Excellent.
Okay. So The questions here is, how can we better serve the pre-Medicaid population and support the families we just talked about? And how can we leverage private resources to pay for long-term care and incentivize people to prepare for future costs? And I have the ideas listed here, but one of the things that is a big issue is long-term care insurance. And long-term care insurance, for anybody that has it or anybody who thought it would be the do-all, save-all for when you actually became disabled, these days are finding this to be very disappointing. Some people never get coverage because of waiting periods and also because of independent people that are hired to qualify somebody to utilize their long-term care insurance. So one of the ideas that came out of this is that how do we set up a statewide long-term care insurance type program where people could contribute into on a pre-Medicaid basis and be able to actually have a long-term care insurance program that was kind of run by the state. So that's kind of controversial in the way that might go, but generally it's not a bad idea, because I think personally that the long-term care policies that are out there, and I've kind of been advocating for some time against purchasing long-term care insurance simply because I'm seeing how ineffective some of these policies have been based upon what people are paying in. And also, when you think about the number of people that have the policies that will be utilizing it, how secure are the insurance companies at this particular point in time when there's increased utilization? So that was one idea. Let me see. And of course, Washington has been very successful in moving people out of institutions and keeping them at home. And I see people every day that are struggling to remain at home, regardless of safety issues and other issues, because that's their preferred place to be, and that's the choice. And so the idea is to take a look at how we can continue to support that through home and community services and setting up quality metrics so we can measure how successful we're being. Of course, these issues are all multi-generational issues. And one of the difficulties that I see now being up at the state level is the competing interests that the legislators, the governor, and all of us are hearing in regards to. We have K-12 issues. We have aging issues. We have unemployment issues. We have food, transportation, housing. And these issues are truly multi-generational issues. Mm-hmm. And so what I would like to see, and what we're trying to work on the council level, is going to be looking at how we stop polarizing and start working together and start figuring out how we can give in certain areas so that the generations can understand each other and work together, and which all by itself is a very big statement. So the question is how we go about doing some of those things. I would like to take a moment before I go into kind of how the Council on Aging has changed as of September, and we've undergone some very big changes, but I'd like to have Representative Harris talk for a little bit about the Aging and Long-Term Care Committee that he is on. And thank you for being on that, too.
Yeah, I didn't have a choice. So Bob, I'm interested in your 80-year-old report you come up with, because I can give you a report of turning 61 and told me what it was going to be like. So I think as we all get older, you know, you turn 61 and you always think you're going to be invincible, you know. So I think as we age, we learn a lot about ourselves. So I think it would be an interesting report. I'd love to hear what it's like to be 80. I wish I had a bunch of information for you. I could lie to you and tell you I do. We've had two meetings, okay? And I think the two meetings have been informative, but I don't think really a lot has been decided by any means. My age-old line is, there is no money right now in the state of Washington. So the heavy lifting, if you look how we balanced last year's budget, we took $850 million of Medicaid expansion money that came from the federal government, and we gave that to education. That's how education ended up with almost $1 billion. Short of that, folks, revenues have been flat in the state of Washington. I believe that the aging community will get more funds. I believe through, as we have this dialogue and as we discuss things, there are certain things that we can do that won't cost a lot of money. I think one of them we talked about is the exploitation of seniors. I think there's some things that we can do that will probably come out of this next session that won't cost us a lot of money, it'll cost us a little, and we will work on that. I think financial responsibility is more of an educational process. I think that's something we can come to a pretty good agreement on too, and that we can help in that way. I really do. When we start talking about the long-term service and support network, that was interesting. So I was in the room, and this is really, I'll be really frank with you. So I'm a Republican, tend to be pretty conservative, can be good or bad. But I was the only Republican in the room with a bunch of Seattle Democrats. And it was an interesting dialogue because where they went with it was they just wanted to do a head tax on everybody that works in the state of Washington at $50 a month, and that was going to help us out a lot. Now, that sounds really easy, okay? I was called into a special session a few weeks after that to cut a deal for Boeing, keep Boeing in the state of Washington, and I guarantee you if we told Boeing, hey, we're going to charge a $50 head tax on every employee, they would probably throw up their arms and go, what the heck are you doing? So I think we need to be very careful on what we do and how we do it. I think, you know, to sit in a group and just say we're going to tax our way out of this, I think is not really the way that we're going to get out of this. I think it's going to be a difficult situation to deal with, but I believe we can do it. I'm very pragmatic. I'm going to have to vote on an 11.5 cent gas tax, okay, coming up. Probably another special session. It'll be my fifth or sixth special session. And decide whether or not the people in the 17th district want to pay an 11.5 cent gas tax. I've done a pretty expensive poll of my people. I've actually polled about 800 people in the 17th district. And about 70% of those people don't want to pay a dime more of anything. I'm just being really honest with you. So, we're in a really tough situation. Of course, I don't think anybody wants to pay more taxes if you really want to ask the question. I mean, how many of us even in this room want to pay more taxes? Probably, well, maybe a couple, and that's all right. That's all right. But most of my people don't want to pay more taxes. So, and it does say representative in front of my title, it doesn't say dictator. So I need to figure out how we're going to get there. And I'm going to be really honest with you. I think some of these things are going to be very difficult. I think some of them are going to be very easy to do. And I really hope, because I'm one of you. You know, I read some of these statistics and I'm just scared of the heebie-jeebies out of me. But people don't have $25,000 worth of savings. 50% have $50,000 or less. That is really, really scary. One third of the population that is old will end up on Medicaid. They'll spend all their money, and you and I will foot that bill, and we will take care of them under Medicaid. Now, federal government doesn't have that type of money, folks. Well, they do. I guess they just keep raising taxes. So it's a really interesting paradigm we're in. My dad retired when he was 63 years old. I don't plan on retiring until I'm 70 or 72, I would think, if I'm lucky. Not that I don't have the money, but you know what? I think my generation is, I hope, a little different. I like work. I really do. I like what I do. I have a pretend job. I'm a legislator that is funny money. But then I have a real job that I do, and I work hard in that job, and I get satisfaction from that. So I'm hoping my generation works longer, and I think they need to. So I might be in a little different realm than some. But I think we're in a really tough paradigm, and I hope I can represent you well on this committee. I will try. I don't think we're going to tax away. Am I okay with a small tax? I might be, actually. I might surprise even myself, because I believe revenues, until the economy actually really, really picks up, we're going to have some increased revenues. The governor today did a supplemental budget. Didn't help any of you, got to be honest with you. Didn't. But he didn't raise taxes either. So that's a good thing. And I don't think we're going to raise taxes. We might raise the gas tax, it'll be interesting. As you can see, we haven't voted on that very fast. That should tell you something. Things in Olympia happen fast when everybody's in agreement. When things aren't in agreement, things move extremely slow. And right now, transportation, that bus is moving very, very slow. So, if you have any questions for me, I'll try to answer them. This committee has only met twice. Huge things to discuss. And you work on a committee yourself. I think you can kind of understand, you get a bunch of legislators who don't agree on a lot of things at times. And although these issues are not really, other than a head tax, I think we had a lot of common agreement. I really do. I think there was a lot of agreement. Not too sure how we're going to get there on some of those things, but there was a lot of agreement. And so I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful. I wish dollars were flowing faster. I wish revenues would increase. Not only for you, but for a variety of things. Supposedly, I'm supposed to come up with more money for education. And the reason I started off with that, I only want you to understand, we came up with $850 million of money. But in the state of Washington, we really did nothing for that money. I mean, as Republicans and as Democrats, we didn't come together on anything to cut funding to come up with extra money. President Obama gave us $850 million to expand Medicaid in the state of Washington. One-time money, one-time thing, and we took it and we gave it to education. Education wants another $1 billion in the next 3 years. Right now it doesn't look like it's going to come through increased revenues. If it does, it's going to be very slow. We're going to have about $500 million more, which sounds like a lot, but it seems to go really fast. So, I didn't know. Did you want any questions or answers at all?
And that education situation is because of McCleary.
The Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has ordered us to fund education more equally and more fair throughout the state. And that there is a disparity from different areas and that we are not allocating. It is the paramount duty, I hope everyone can read me, it is the paramount duty in the state constitution that education is our paramount duty. And along with that duty comes certain responsibilities. And the Supreme Court has pretty much told us what that duty is. And they have kind of given us a figure of an additional $3.5 billion into education. So we came up with $1 billion last year, and we're gonna have to come up with $2.5 billion more dollars. That's about a 10% if you look at our budget, our 2 year budgets. We gotta come up with another 10% money during some pretty tough times. And we've been ordered that by the courts. So we're gonna come up with it. I just hope that things get better in the economy. That would be the easiest way. If not, we're going to have to do like a lot of you do. We're going to have to fight within our budgets to figure out how we can save money.
Gary, should I take like 2 minutes and talk about the state council or just move to questions?
Oh, you can talk about the state council. We have time to do that.
The state council on aging is actually a group of 22 people, four of which are appointed by the governor. I'm one of the appointees by the governor. The rest are appointed by the AAAs in the 13 areas. And a couple of other persons that are like the counties, the group of counties.
Advisory counties.
Yeah. And so this particular year, we had a 50% turnover because people, their terms ended. So it was kind of, we served two, three-year consecutive terms, and some people come on when other people, and being that you have to be over the age of 55, sometimes we lose people to death. Because some of our people are kind of up there. So other people are brought in to fulfill their terms. But in September, we literally had a 50% turnover in state council members, which in some ways is very good because we're taking a whole different approach to what our mandates are. We have we're formed under the RCW 43.20A.695. And so under that, we have specific responsibilities that we need to fulfill. And up to now, the State Council has been influenced by a number of other groups like AARP and DSHS and the Senior Lobby, different groups that have kind of come and reported to us, and we really haven't taken any action. But luckily, I was on the original task force here. So taking the knowledge of what we did and how we organized and so forth, I took that up to the State Council level. And this is the first time at the State Council level that we have work committees that are focused on different areas with specific outcomes that have been identified for those different committees. And every member is required to be on a committee, and that's never happened before. So the turnover of about 50% of the population or the membership was really good, because those people had no idea that I was going to make it work. They thought that was just something that we did. So that's kind of been good. We have set up committees. The three things that we're mandated to do in the RCW is, first of all, we are the advisor group to the governor on all matters pertaining to aging in the state of Washington, and that's why there's statewide representation on this council. So we actually educate and recommend policy to the governor's office, to Kevin Quigley's office, and to Bill Moss with DSHS. Those are the three people that we actually talk about policy in regards to aging issues. Historically, we really didn't have a lot to talk about because we didn't do the other two parts of what the mandate is. And the first part of that is to educate our local communities about what the issues are and to let them know on what's going on the state level. And of course, the third part of that would be the grassroots efforts of finding out what the local citizens are wanting at, in regards to aging issues or what the issues are, and to bring that back up and actually be able to formulate this information in a way to present to the governor and to Kevin Quigley and Bill Moss. So now we've implemented that. We're going back and we're doing grassroots gathering of information in all the areas of the state. And our first focus, because we are such a new group and because people are working in committees and this is all new to them, we have to find what our committees are and what our membership is. But in order to formulate this, we're only going to focus initially on one thing, and that's transportation. And we have chosen transportation because nobody else seems to be looking at the whole transportation package. I mean, we are certainly looking at, we want to look at it across all demographics, which is rural and urban, but also across all economic needs as well, because the focus is usually the poor person. We want to look at what the issues are, and so what we're doing right now, our research committee is sent forth and gathering all the transportation, the AAA transportation plans, and also going to the communities and finding out what's working and what's not beyond just those transportation plans. And our local representative is Suzanne Holmes, and she is on the local AAA, the Southwest Washington Area Agency on Aging, and so she's gathering that information locally. So if anybody has any input on transportation and so forth, that's something that we're just in the beginning phases of that. So we're pretty excited. We've got a lot of big hitters on the council now, and it's going to be, I think, pretty effective. And I have asked Representative Chop if he would appoint Representative Harris to serve on that committee as well. We haven't heard back yet. So, but he's willing to, so that's even better. So that's pretty much an overview. So now we'll just open it to questions.
Okay. Does the commissioners have any questions for Gail or Representative Harris? Yes, Lisa?
You know it. So for both committees, and Gail, you know this for me, is I have yet to hear or see anything come out about the mental health issues that we have, our state hospitals. We won't even go into APS and all of that, but as the aging, and you know this, as mental health doesn't stop when you turn 65 or 60 or whatever, and then it adds to it. And even though the DMS doesn't consider dementia as a mental health, there's a lot of other facets, and it's not being addressed anywhere in the state. You know, there's rumors that always fly that Western is going to get closed down. You couldn't get a bed in there. Each county is allotted so many beds. And people are stuck in the hospital because no facilities will take them. And it's getting worse by the day, and you know that. And I never hear anything about that. I never hear what the state wants to do about it. You know, while I understand that education and we're mandated to it, that was a lot of money for us to lose towards our demographic. And we need to get that money back or to do something else. But what is your commission and has the long-term part of it, for you, Representative, even begun to think about how to address those needs?
So mental health, it's interesting you bring that up. So my life is, the committees I sit on in healthcare appropriations, and the appropriations committee. So the appropriations committee handles all the funds throughout the entire state. And I sit on the healthcare appropriations, and I sit on healthcare. We had a separate meeting we had a special meeting about 3 weeks ago specifically dealing with mental health. I think you will see coming out of this legislation, this next session, some reforms happening in the mental health selfishly for a lot of reasons, no matter how you feel about guns, but guns and mental health has become a significant issue in our society. That is just one thing that has prompted it, let alone our hospitals and how we're treating them. And we spent an entire day just going over Western, the process, what's going on, Harborview, how the 72 hours, I mean, all the things that go on with mental health. I think you're going to actually see some changes in mental health. And I think you're going to see some more. Believe it or not, that will be one of the areas, as we get more funds, that will be an area that will be addressed, I think, rather fast. I really do.
So my question is, though, you know, we're the sixth largest county in the state, mm-hmm. and we have absolutely no mental health facilities.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 9 beds at a 72-hour hold, 14-week
yep.
hold. So when your committees are looking at that, how do you address that? I mean, you know, you talked about Harborview and all of that, and that's all up north.
No, actually. Yeah.
But this is our area, and yeah. we are inundated with it, whether they come across the river, the VA, whatever it is. And so I'm hoping that if there's a committee or in your appropriations that you get testimony or seek out other members in the community to sit on that to tell them their frustrations from their professional point of view.
I also
volunteer.
Okay. I think that as healthcare reform plays out in this state, and I personally think that managed care organizations ultimately will be taking over almost everything. It just seems like that's what's going to happen, and I believe mental health is going to be rolled into the managed care organizations as they start taking a look at the whole perspective of what they have to manage. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, and I think we're going to see it in the next 10 to 15 years. The managed care organizations, I think, are going to become much more powerful, not just here, but nationwide.
Any other questions? Yes, Bob.
Is the commission considering, or the coalition considering, an educational campaign to make the population aware of the wave that's coming and what the problems are? When I talk to people about these solutions, the first question they say is, why? And then I have to spend a half an hour explaining to them what's going to happen in the next 20 years to our demography and all of the problems that the population is going to have. Then they say, well, yeah, that is a good idea. And, you know, we talk about the legislature making decisions. Unless those people out there are behind you, I don't care what kind of decisions you make, you're going to get no's from the population. And I think we really need to spend some time educating the population in the next 5 years or so of the problems that are coming along, so that when you're starting to make decisions, that you may find somebody say, yeah, I'm willing to raise my taxes.
Yeah, they won't shoot the messenger, sure. No, I think knowledge is so important out of all this. And that's actually, being able to get information is probably the least expensive thing. That's relatively inexpensive to be able to do that. So being able to give out the knowledge, I think, is like I said, those were the things that we can do. And I think what you brought up is very important. I think educating the voters and educating the population on what's transpiring in our society with aging populations is huge.
Absolutely. Those folks are going to say yes or no.
I agree.
Unless there's a reason for them to say yes, they're going to say no.
I think also, though, one of the issues that we have is it's not just a matter of educating what's happening with the senior population and how that's going to affect everyone. We're talking 20% is going to be seniors. That leaves another 80%. And that 80%, to a large degree, is becoming very resentful of the 20%. And the difficulty that I feel that needs to be addressed is how we bring the generations together so that we understand each other's problems. Because the younger generation is not just interested in hearing our problems. And the way that I feel, as I consider myself an elder, is societal responsibilities of elders in years gone by was to educate and help the younger generation as well. And there's got to be a way that we educate not just people in a threatening way, but in a problem-solving way. How do we bring all the generations together to work together? And it's not just by us forcing down the younger generation's throat about what our issues are.
We're talking about creating a perfect society, not a society just for a particular population.
That's right. But the problem is everybody is so polarized into their own issues. And to me, the number one way to solve all of these issues is how do we start working on a grassroots level to bring the generations together so that we're presenting to our legislators and to everyone else more of a unified voice of how these solutions will come about.
That's agenda number one that the commission ought to be following rather than maybe a list of things that need to be provided.
Sure, but that's not exactly necessarily what they're charged with, and I do believe
that particular issue
has to be handled through us. On the grassroots level, how do we bring people together? We don't talk together anymore in regards to young versus old. How do we do that? And I think that you all are in a perfect position to do that as well. I'm trying to make that happen on a statewide basis, but it's a long pull because we're just starting and the council meets 8 times a year. So how do we get that going on a statewide basis? It's going to take years.
Exactly. One of the things that I think our commission has been very good about is part of our mission statement is intergenerational involvement within our community, and we found that to be very important. So we've actually grasped onto that and trying to work with it. Recruiting younger volunteers has been an issue, but we're working on that as well. Chuck?
Well, I'm really glad to see you again, and like to see you a little bit more. I think you really bring a lot of great information to us. I was very pleased to see the terminology livable communities. And the definition, however, was kind of, it's all encompassing.
Yes, certainly.
And everything. And so we've kind of taken the task, or kind of narrowed it down to really looking at neighborhoods. And saying, okay, neighborhood by neighborhood by neighborhood, what is it that can go and happen in those neighborhoods? And then as part of that complete neighborhood piece, I'm really glad to see that looking at small planning grants or some types of funding, let's go and say for a neighborhood, to go after complete streets. And complete streets being more looking at how they can get from their home out to a street that provides transportation for them to get on in a safe way, meaning having sidewalks. And sidewalks is really at the bottom of the totem pole when you talk about any kind of financing, any kind of funding at all.
Chuck, I'll try to help you with that because you're absolutely right. Actually, Chuck, bikes come before sidewalks.
bikes come before sidewalks. And why is that? I happen to be on
why
the
is that?
Fed group, but
well,
yeah.
Why is that? It's because we, as federal dollars are given to the state, part of that exception, not exception, but I guess part of that mandate, and I really would like to work on this. I mean, 40% of our highway transportation dollars now do not go to roads. Okay. And you and I could have a philosophical discussion on that, but that was road money that was taken from all of us spending our gas tax, and it's going either into bikes, it's going into mass transit, it's going into a variety of other things, but it's definitely not going into sidewalks. And I would love for us to take a look at one, at how we spend some of our monies, just in general. And you'll probably see a piece of weird legislation come out of me this year that'll be the most most crazy legislation I've ever done. But I want to get rid of actually the gas tax entirely, the state gas tax. And I'm going to work on a different venue of funding our roads. But that's part of the reason, is because I really believe that there's inequity in how we're spending our tax dollars right now. And I'd be all in favor of taking a look. I'd rather put sidewalks in. Hope there's not too many bikers in here. I'd rather put sidewalks in first and address biking on a whole separate issue.
Right.
So
well, the
part of it's taken away out of our hands, I guess, to tell you, to be honest.
The bike group is very organized. They have a speaking piece out there and everything. We pedestrians, are we organized? No. Who are we? We don't, nobody knows who we are. And so nobody thinks about the person who is shut in at their home because they can't get out down the street in a safe way to be able to go and catch a bus. Nobody talks about that, nobody looks at that. And it's kind of the, almost, in my opinion, it's kind of a taboo type of a thing to go on and discuss. And so we're really looking at this whole complete streets and bringing a whole sidewalk issue up a notch or two as far as that's concerned. And then I was also really pleased in whenever you're talking about the livable communities, about the basic principles of universal design. And so whenever you're talking about a complete neighborhood, that is universal. Everybody then in that neighborhood then can benefit from the streets, from the housing, from all of the different pieces that make up that. And so it is, we think about universal design as far as designing a home, which that's my forte, designing a home. We don't think about it in a more robust way as far as a neighborhood is concerned. And what does that mean as far as being universal in nature?
Great.
I'll work with you on your sidewalk.
Absolutely.
And I would like to end our questions for you at this point and open it up for general public comments. We have 10 minutes to do that. And so are there any public that would like to have public comments? Yes.
You're addressing the long-term care, possibly doing some type of a state-facilitated long-term care plan. On our federal taxes, we can write off long-term care insurance premiums as people pay that. But basically, we can do something where the long-term care, getting younger people to start participating in a state-funded and managed program, having those premiums that they pay or contribute to be deductible, but maybe go a step further to get people incentive to participate and contribute, is for every $500 of premium money a day, then you're getting $100 of tax credit. Income limitations to it, so it's either a refundable tax credit or people that make too much money. But I think giving people incentive, people understand dollars more than anything else. But I agree with you, I work with seniors on the reverse mortgage side, and every once in a while I get a long-term care insurance seller will tell me, hey, Mark, you know, I got a great customer that wants to get my product, that in order for them to even afford it, they have to use the equity out of their home. I'm thinking, well, that's pretty dang expensive. But it was nice to hear you say that you don't really stand behind long-term care insurance, and I'm kind of there with you. I think if people get into it and start paying into it when they're 13 years old, maybe they can be affordable on a monthly basis. But when people think about long-term care coverage, they're usually about 60, and those premiums can be anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a month, depending on the type of coverage they get. And so I think if we can do some type of a state-managed system and have some type of tax credit, you know, I know we don't have an income tax here, and I'm not promoting that, but if we can do something with the Fed level, that would be helpful. And also have a way to solve the sidewalk issue, we can just start a new shoe tax.
Thank you. Anybody else have a public comment? Yes.
This has been really passionately interesting. I think you did a fantastic presentation. I didn't expect that it was going to be as interesting as it was. And to realize what your people in government, I guess is what you call it, what you do and what you have to take care of. We are in an incredible situation right now. And all I can say is that I'm thinking of a great deal these days. When I first heard about this Commission on Aging, the Commission on Aging, I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. And then Aging Readiness Plan, I said, wow, that's fine with a good end. That sounds interesting. I've never been involved in anything public. I'm a social cultural person, and so this is all kind of new. So I came down and I heard a couple of presentations. But what I felt was missing was the presence of people who are 80 and over. I said, well, where are they? They're the ones that this is all about. And I felt that they should be present. Now, I just have to tell you this. When my mother was getting older, I got her some books on aging. And she said, all I talk about is illness. Well, she was absolutely right on to it, because today, every time you read about aging, it talks about getting sick and being needy and having to go to a home. I think that it is America is just so incredibly taken with earning money and having business succeed that they have discovered a new market. And that new market is older people. When you're older, you've seen other markets. I saw them develop a market of kids, young kids who didn't used to have anything except just a small little allowance, who bought chewing gum or some candy bars when I was growing up. And now the kids have enormous sums of money to go and buy machine after machine after machine. We have gone too far with all that. It's a very, very dangerous situation that we're in. And now we've discovered old people. Why, in America, you can't forget your keys if you're over 65. You're immediately, someone's gonna say, oh, look, you're getting Alzheimer's. You see, I lived in Europe for 30 years. I've only come back 10 years ago. I'm American born. I lived in Switzerland, mostly in France, I'm 77, but I lived there for 40 years. In Europe, they don't talk about that all the time when you forget something. They know everybody forgets things all the time, all their life. And particularly now with all the cards and things we have to carry. You don't hear about that. There's great respect for people that are older. They're not treated like, but here it's just always talking about us and the money we're going to need to get older. Oh, my goodness. Well, this is what I think we should do. This is very important. This, for me, I think this is important. I think many of you will agree. We need to have a commission or a council or an assembly of elders. And by elder, I'm sorry, I don't consider 55 elder or 65 elder. They're still working. They're still caught up in the stress and the go, go, go of this country. I presume you have to reach 70. And even there, you can still be pushed on. You said you were going to work till you were 72. Well, you can't ever stop in this country. If you stop and you're walking slowly, someone's going to come up and say, are you okay? Oh, that makes me so The young people are all there. They're conditioned to do that. They say, you see somebody walking slowly, if you're not going 50 miles an hour in this country, there's something the matter with you. So I ask them, I say, well, is that, are you okay? You know, because they're the ones that have to start realizing and learning. So educating them is very, very important. So why don't we, I'd like to plant the seed for a council or an assembly of elders. And this would be a group of people, 70 and older, with wisdom and experience. They would have to be people who wanted to come together to talk, and we could make some recommendations for things. We could come up with some darn good ideas, because we've seen. Remember, we've been around through the 40s and the 50s. We saw that horrendous change of the 60s. A lot of these people, they have no idea what happened then. We have that, we know that. We could talk and listen to each other in a calm way, not stressed and I gotta go, all this business of being, gee, we're just going too fast in this. Of course we have mental health problems. We're stressed out of our, it's just awful with stress. So anyway, I would like to propose that, not that something could happen immediately, but that we would, I want to talk to people who are 70 and older. I want to hear what they have to say. In Europe and in the history of this world, older people have been the ones that have been turned to, or have had a lot to say. They're some of the greatest philosophers in our world. Look at Mandela, who just died, way up in his 90s. I mean, we're blind in this country. We're such a young country, we don't even see that. So. And then those people could be very helpful to you. I think you had some, I've got notes all over here. I think you had some wonderful ideas. You restore my belief in government to hear people like you. Really. Gail Caskett and Paul Harris, I will remember your names.
Well, what's your name, Gail? Because I want you to, you calmed me down a little, so I'm going to slow down. Absolutely. I like it. I'll move slower tomorrow.
Well,
what's your name?
Next stage. My name is Jane.
Yep.
And my American name is Rather. No relation to Dan Rather, incidentally.
Good. Holy kid.
And Thiebaud is my last name. It's a Swiss name. Thiebaud, T-H-I-E-B-A-U-D. And I'm a new resident of the West. Your ancestors all came out West. Well, I recently discovered from a man who was 78 years old and wrote a fantastic book that I went East. I was born in Texas. We went East. I was raised in New York. And then I went to Europe. So I went back to where we came from. We white people in this room. There's one black man, and he came from Africa. That's over there on the other side too. We all didn't even come from this place. And we have a lot of wisdom that we can learn from Europe. Unfortunately, well, excuse me, I can go on and on. I'd love to come and give a talk on this. I guess there's much more that I couldn't possibly say in a few minutes, but. Thank you, and I am just so happy. Congratulations to your commission on aging and all you're doing.
Thank you, Jane. We've talked before about having a council of wisdom, and I certainly appreciate your perspective in doing that, Jane. Thank you so much for sharing with us. It's a highlight to have you here. Thank you. At this point in time, we're out of time. No disrespect to Jane there about having to do that, but Oliver, would you like to have a few minutes, please?
Thank you. I just want to quickly say thank you, Gail and Representative Paul Harris, for coming to be with us. I will be in the future working with you, the chair, to begin to look at issues relating to budget. The county will be preparing their biannual budget in 15-16, and that's an area that I think the Commission on Aging will play a significant role, advocacy role, in at least committing the commissioners to, I believe, increase your budget It is a need that I recognize, and I want to make sure that that is not forgotten. Secondly, I'll be working with the chair to really think on my feet about the upcoming joint Commission on Aging and the Board of County Commissioners. I also want to thank you all for the annual report to the community that was completed. I will say that I was very happy with that, and the commissioners were as well. I want to also thank you, Gary, for the bank account that was set up, and Randy for the conference on telehealth. And all of you, we did talk about how difficult it is to be a volunteer. I've worked with so many volunteers that the commissioners have appointed. It is very difficult. And sometimes we don't say thank you, but I want to take this opportunity to say thank you. We are in the holiday season. I won't take up your time, but I want to apologize that I will not be joining you later this evening. I will have the opportunity to do that some other time. You have the staff from my shop that will continue to support you, and that's all I would like to say. Thank you very much. Thank you, Gail. It's nice to see you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Oliver. Oliver, I thank you for having the staff that you have with you. Colette, Jackie, and Mary Beth are just wonderful to work with, and we certainly appreciate their efforts and their guidance as a commission. And certainly we'll be working on trying to be an advisor not only to the council and to Representative Harris, but we know the aging field. You have a huge amount of knowledge and breadth of wisdom here within our group, and we would like to offer our services to you as a commission to help you guide you through the aging things that you have to deal with on the state level. And I think Lisa brought up an excellent point. We want to see some of the dollars that we contribute brought back into our county, and I think that's important for us, especially on the mental health field. So we'll be more than happy to offer testimony, do what we need to do to help solicit those funds back into our county to work with you in any way possible. And so I'd like to offer that as an
for you. Don't be afraid to ask.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to come up and beat the doors down. And I mean it sincerely.
Oh, I'm doing that.
Absolutely.
I will say Lisa is very excellent at that.
She's savvy.
Can I address one thing that Randy and I forgot to address was telemedicine.
Yes.
I think telemedicine is going to be, we had a problem between the insurance carriers and the doctors. That was discussed last session. I think I think in this session we will come to an agreement on compensation for doctors and telemedicine. I believe it'll become a great thing that those that are shut in will have the opportunity. Yeah. I took a rural health tour, and it is amazing what is happening with telemedicine.
Yeah.
And I think part of the problem has been compensation with insurance carriers.
Yeah.
We're going to come to an agreement on that, and I think you're going to see telemedicine will help with aging considerably.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Overcome that hurdle, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly, and I don't know whether you know Representative Harris or not. We have an individual here that has a company that is founded on telehealth and does that here, and Randy brought her out, and that's Vanessa
McLaughlin. I know Vanessa, and I've met with her.
Excellent to do that. So we're very proud of that project that she's done here for us.
A couple glitches, and I think we're working through them, and I think you're going to see it. It's going
great.
To become much easier.
And again, I want to appreciate and thank you so much for coming, Representative Harris. It's our first representative we've had from this district coming here, so thank you very much for showing up.
It's my job to be here, honestly.
Great.
Absolutely.
And we're very honored, and Gail, always a pleasure and an honor to see you, and thank you, and if we can be of any support with you, let us know. I'd like to have a motion to adjourn, if that's possible.
So moved.
I second.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.
I would love to
I'm sorry.
Yeah.